Joining us now, very pleased to welcome my next guest. Took time away from his family vacation to come on this program, so we're very appreciative of that. State Representative Danny Garrett is on the line. Representative, how are you this morning?
Doing great. Good morning. Appreciate you having me.
Hey, thanks for taking the time out to talk to us. I want to get you on. You serve also as the whip in the House of Representatives, and my observation, just compared to prior legislatures, at least in the last few years or so, but the House seems to be moving at a pretty good pace. Obviously, with COVID in the backdrop and not knowing what could happen, but what the future has in store, it's kind of forced you to get a little more active. But is that a fair statement? Do you think that you've had to maybe adapt and move things along a little bit faster this session?
Yeah, I think we've been very productive. I think it's probably a combination of reasons. One, I think people have, come rolled up, ready to work. And we're in the House, we're sort of spread over three different venues, so we're not all in one room, which means that each area is a little bit quieter, and maybe we're focused a little bit, easier to focus. But so far, I think the issues we've taken up have been important issues, and I think people have been focused. And people's mindsets right now are basically, aware of all the issues that are happening back home in our districts. So people are ready to work and try to do things that are productive. And so I think it's a good, and I think the leadership's done a good job of getting us organized and with the calendars. And, we're working really well with the minority caucus at this point with legislation. So, it's been very productive so far.
Yeah, and I guess also having limited access to that building, maybe you have a little more time freed up. But getting the state house with the Capitol open back up and then the governor's mansion under certain limitations, does it look like the state house is that much further behind?
Yeah, I think that's going to happen. It's the people's house. We're going to have to open that. We need that. And you're right. We have fewer visitors these days, so our time is not as constrained as. We are meeting with people in the state house, but you have to arrange that in advance and meet in, rooms and whatnot. So I think that soon we'll be getting back. I don't know if that will happen, how soon that will happen, but yes, it's going to happen. It needs to happen soon.
And then you had kind of a run. You saved a lot of controversial bills, the transgender bill, this anti-rioting legislation by Alan Treadaway. You saved a lot of the more controversial stuff for last week, and it looked like although there was some opposition and you had to have a cloture vote a few times, that you got a lot of these. I don't know if they're big ticket necessarily, but they would be heavy lifts under any other circumstances done last week.
Yeah, we have a supermajority, so the fact is that we could cloture every vote that came up, and probably, as long as the Republicans are all in agreement, we could prevail on every issue. But that's not the way the Democratic process works. We're supposed to have, the minority party should have their say and should be treated fairly. And just like in D.C. right now, you're seeing the reverse is what's happening in Alabama. So we don't like to cloture a lot. But sometimes it's necessary. And last week we did have four bills that we felt pretty strongly about as a caucus, and we wanted to move those forward. And so on that same calendar, we had two bills from the minority caucus, and we passed those as well. Of course, those didn't require cloture at all, but it worked well. The speaker, I think, wisely allowed discussion and debate to happen in each of those four bills. We could have gone there and very quickly cloture moved on, but that's not the way the process is supposed to work. So people were able to make their points, to have their say. We had good discussion, good debate, and then we ended up, leaving, I think, on a very positive note.
Yeah, because anytime you get bills passed, there tends to be a little pep in the step after that, because it does feel like you're moving the ball forward. And you typically it's hard to get things through the legislature. I don't think people realize that you file a bill and it maybe it probably goes through some kind of committee process. Then if it gets through the committee process, it's not always a certainty that it's going to get even attention on the floor.
Yeah, fortunately, it's hard to pass legislation because there's a lot. There'll be probably 1,300 bills filed this year, and maybe 300 pass. So there'll be 1,000 bills that don't make it to the process because, you know, like you say, it has to go through a House committee, then a House floor, then a Senate committee, and a Senate floor. And sometimes there's, you know, conference committees, and it's difficult to pass legislation. And I think that's not a bad idea. The only thing we're required to do by the Constitution is pass the budgets, and that's our the other thing that's significant is that this is the first time I can remember, probably in my time down there. I've been there 2 terms, but we passed. You know, we have 2 budgets, and so we have the general fund and the education budget, and they alternate which body they start in. And this year, the general fund started in the House, the education budget started in the Senate, and both budgets passed before the break, and that's unusual. And that's important because once you pass the budgets, then we no longer have to go through this BIR process, which adds up to 40 minutes of debate for each bill that comes up. So because until you pass the budgets, you're bringing everything up out of order. So you have to go through this additional BIR procedure, which, like I said, the House adds 40 minutes to each bill. So we'll be even more efficient once we get the other two bills, the budgets passed.
The budgets are interesting. I guess now the general fund, we had Greg Albritton on the program a little earlier. He doesn't think, you know, the getting these budgets through the Senate is gonna, or at least the general fund budget through the Senate, the Education Trust Fund already made its way, but that it's going to be that easy. He thinks it's going to be really tough, and he cites the present issue as what he thinks is going to be a big hang-up. We haven't talked a whole lot about that, but is there any buzz? Is there any sense that you guys are going to maybe have to recraft or tweak these budgets before they're finally signed into law?
Well, that always happens. I mean, every time you pass a budget from one body to the next, the other body makes changes. They always go to conference committee. I didn't hear Senator Albritton's comments this morning, so I'm not sure exactly what he's referring to, but I would expect there would be changes, but I don't know what he's hearing in the Senate as far as specifics. But, you know, the governor, you know, where the budget process starts, the governor sends both budgets to the respective body, and you start there. So, of course, we made changes in the general fund budget from what the governor sent, and the Senate did the same to the education budget. So that's the process. So I'm not sure what specifically he's referring to, but it's typical that we would have changes and then go to conference committee to work out the differences.
Joined by State Representative Danny Garrett here on the program, always a privilege to have him on. Representative, the big discussion in state politics right now, maybe it gets more than it coverage that it should, but it's obviously gaming. Now, when I talked to leadership in your body, it's a wait and see on a gaming bill or something. Typically you do say, but we're open to the possibility of a special session later in the year. It looks like all the action's in the Senate. Do you have any sense that there's anything, any pulse on gambling in the House of Representatives?
You know, you're right. This all has originated in the Senate. We've had no discussion, in the House, in the caucus or in the on the floor in any committee with any of the gaming legislation. Every year when you get the gaming legislation that comes up, I always describe it to people that the problem is you've got to get a majority. You've got to get 3/5. You got to get a kind of a higher threshold because it's a constitutional amendment that would have to be voted by the people. So to get that on the ballot, you have to have a higher threshold in the body to get to that point. And so that's a hurdle. You probably have about 25% of the House members, I would guess, that are just against gaming in any form, lottery, whatever. That leaves 75% that are open to some form, but they're kind of in the state to organize what I would call gaming factions. And those groups never seem to get on the same page. And so whichever group has the legislation that they like, the other group aligns with the people who are against gaming, and it never passes. So, you know, I think the thought early on was that we were going to have a comprehensive bill that had those groups together. And of course that didn't happen. And, don't know where it goes. I think in the House, last year we passed, legislation to put a lottery on the ballot. I think the more expansive gaming is, the more difficult it becomes in general, but particularly in the house. But at this point, we really not had any discussion in our body about it. And it's late in the session for that to be happening.
Yeah.
Not happening.
And I guess that would, you know, raise the question, could we see a special session? Do you get a sense that that's in the cards?
Well, I think my understanding is we're going to see a special session to do with reapportionment, which will be later in the year once all the census numbers come out, because the districts will have to be addressed. It'd be up to the governor if she wanted to call a special session as far as the gaming issue. I've not really heard much about that in the House, but that'd be the governor's decision.
We'll have to wait and see. What part, whenever we talk about gambling, everybody's kind of focused on the part of it that's the legacy dog tracks and the Porch Creek Indians or whatever. But what I find when I watch this in the past with the House of Representatives is kind of the big discussion seems to be, well, the proceeds, where would we dedicate the monies? When you say education, that could mean a bunch of different things. Does that seem to be something that is even on the mind? I guess without a gambling bill being debated, but on the minds, we got to be thinking about where this money could go if it should, if the bill should make its way through your body.
Well, yeah, and that matters to people. I have people in my district who tell me, they want a lottery, want a chance to go on the lottery, and then they'll follow up by saying, but only if the money goes to education. And then you say, what does that mean? Well, only if it goes to K through 12. Others will say only if it goes to higher ed. I think this lottery, the gaming proceeds that was initially proposed in the Senate was going to go for scholarships to higher ed. Well, a lot of people didn't like that use of it. There are a few people that think that, well, the Education Trust Fund has all the growth revenue in it, so the proceeds need to go into the general fund. And then the other people are adamantly opposed to that. In Mississippi, they use the gaming money to go into the road fund, which is another fund we have. And some people suggested that. But once people say they're for it, when you do start asking, but then they will a lot of times come back and say, but only if this, So, the use of the proceeds is a challenge. Alabama is one of three states that has two budgets. And then, of course, we have a separate fund for road fund, and the road fund can only be funded by gasoline taxes, the federal government. But because we have two funds, 83% of our revenue is earmarked to either of those funds. So I'm a business guy. Normally we budget based upon need. You would appropriate based upon need. Well, in Alabama, you can't do that because revenue goes here, revenue goes there, and you can't move it between the two budgets. So we are, we unfortunately don't, in general, appropriate based upon need. We have to be aware of those earmarks. Now, I will say in the last several years with the budget reform issues, and when you look at the health of both budgets right now, the reserves we've got, that indicates that within those constraints, we're doing a pretty good job of prioritizing and being fiscally responsible and conservative in our budgeting. But it's a challenge because we have the two budgets. That limits what we can do as well.
And Representative, we'll wrap it up on this. You and Senator Roberts upstairs in the Senate, y'all had a pretty decent bill you got through with the taxation. Obviously, the big part of it was not taxing federal benefits from the CARES Act or any kind of COVID relief from the federal government. But by extension, you were able to tweak the tax code in a way that was, that took into account the Trump tax cuts from his early in his administration. What has been the reception to that? Are we how long do you think it will be until we start seeing some of the benefits of that bill?
Well, we did address the initial reason was to address the Trump tax cuts and the impact that they had in Alabama, because in Alabama, because we allow for a federal income tax deduction, you kind of have an unusual thing. When the feds cut the tax rate, that increases Alabama taxes, and vice versa, when they raise taxes, lowers Alabama taxes. So we were trying to look at specifically that Trump tax cut bill, what, if anything, did we need to do to make sure that we didn't inadvertently increase taxes in Alabama. And we addressed that, but we also extended it to enact the Alabama Business Competitiveness Act, which basically the big change there was we changed the apportionment factor so that businesses who are in Alabama who sell to other states would actually now pay less tax than a business outside the state that sells into Alabama. Our apportionment factor was archaic, and it penalized businesses who were located in Alabama. That has taken that will take effect immediately, and so that's going to benefit a lot of businesses. And in terms of economic development, when we get, for example, an automobile factory like a plant like we've had, often the suppliers will locate across the state lines because of the apportionment issue. That won't be a factor anymore for someone looking out of state. So that particular provision, I think it was very technical and not something that a lot of people focused on, but the business community is really excited about that. Business community in Alabama is, and I think that you're going to see the benefits of that, pretty quickly.
Representative, we got to leave it there, but thank you for making time for us this morning. Let's talk again real soon.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
State Representative Danny Garrett, ladies and gentlemen.